It's 6 p.m. on the first day of the month, and the Winco in downtown Boise is full of shoppers. Assistant store manager Edie Duncan says a large number of those shoppers are probably using the food stamp card.
There's probably a lot of it going on today, being the first of the month.
Duncan says other shoppers can't tell who is on the food stamp program.
Unless they know what the card is when somebody pulls it out, it happens so fast that my guess is that they wouldn't know. It's pretty discreet. They just go ahead and enter their PIN number, and it would be just like using a debit card.
One shopper using the food stamp card today is Becky Parham.
Let's go. It's so busy.
Like many on food stamps, Parham has had to wait until the first of the month to go shopping.
When I was growing up, my family was very middle class. We never had to worry about money, so in that respect, this is very new to me. Now I think I need some strawberries.
Signing up for food stamps is a new experience for a lot of people. Latest figures show that 149,000 Idahoans are now receiving food stamps. That's more than a 40% increase over last year. The food stamp program is federally funded, but administered by individual states. Lori Wolf is the deputy administrator for the Division of Welfare. Kim Lafferty is program manager for Boise, McCall, and Mountain Home. We sat down with both administrators at the Westgate Health and Welfare Office in Boise. Kim Lafferty says the dramatic increase in food stamp applications began about a year ago.
Beginning in midsummer last year is when we started seeing a new clientele, those who have never been on any type of assistance before. And these are people that had the higher incomes, had stable jobs, had stable homes and medical and all of that. And then all of a sudden, because of the layoffs and the economy, it's what drove them into here to get some help.
Deputy Administrator Lori Wolf says about 9% of Idaho's population participates in the food stamp program. She says that's much lower than many other states.
We see people use the food stamp program as the last resort in Idaho and will typically turn to family or church organizations or other community programs before they'll turn to the food stamp program or health and welfare for assistance.
But Wolf says a growing number of families find it increasingly difficult to survive.
They just, have never been in the situation where they haven't been able to provide food for their family, are all of a sudden having to make those tough choices between heat and food and mortgage payments.
Lafferty says it's hard to watch the people who need the assistance, but who fall short of the income guidelines set by the federal government.
Those we don't just turn away, but we do help them by providing assistance in referrals to community partners, the different food banks and different agencies in the community who do offer help. So that's the one thing that those we can't help, we do refer them to people who can help them.
Getting help from the food stamp program is much easier than it once was. The Idaho Health and Welfare Department has worked very hard to streamline the application process. In some instances, an applicant can walk in the door, get processed, and walk out that same day with a food stamp card. One of those applicants, Ben, has just walked in the door at the Fairview office. Ben is young, dressed in a t-shirt, and holding a paper form. He's meeting his case manager for the first time.
And are you currently working right now? When's the last time that you worked?
That's Kimberly Ruffin, a self-reliance specialist with the Department of Health and Welfare. Ruffin has 4 years' experience helping people sign up for food stamps. Ruffin says each person who walks in the door gets a face-to-face meeting with someone on staff to determine what kind of help they need.
And I see that you're 18, so are you living with a family member, a friend?
Kind of hang out with my friend, but we're just trying to stick together.
Ben says he's living house to house, relying on his friends to find a place to stay. He had a food stamp card a few months ago, and it was a big help. After more questions, some computer research, and another form, Ruffin has some good news for Ben.
So being in a single-person household, you're going to be eligible for $113. Okay. Next month's benefits will be $200. Okay.
Ben will pick up his card today, though it will take a day or two for it to be activated. Once it's up and running, he can walk into the grocery store and buy food. Along with food stamps, Ben gets an application for housing and some job training.
Once qualified for food stamps, participants have to recertify every 6 months with the program. And they must follow federal guidelines and other programs designed to help escape the cycle of poverty.
Back at Winco, Becky Parham is cruising the busy aisles. In her shopping cart, she has grapes, cheese, and yogurt. She's dodging carts in search of the bulk food section.
Winco is really good for getting cheap food because there's stuff like this in bulk, and it's really, really cheap, so you can make food stamp money go really far.
Parham is one of the 149,000 Idahoans currently using food stamps. Her story is tied to the economy and to the ever-widening divide between those who want to work and the number of jobs available.
I just graduated from college in May and graduated into a really horrible job market, and so I didn't really know quite what I wanted to do. So I just started applying to all kinds of jobs.
Parham took a job as a VISTA volunteer. It's an AmeriCorps National Service Program. VISTA members work for 1 year at a nonprofit organization or a local government agency in an effort to help people.
The point of VISTA is to fight poverty while you're supposedly living in it, and then I'm supposed to experience the economic hardship like people that I'm trying to help.
As part of the VISTA program, Parham moved from Madison, Wisconsin to Boise to take the job of community garden coordinator at the Idaho Food Bank. Her salary falls below the poverty line, and she qualifies for food stamps.
It is kind of a different mentality that you have to have, because I kind of ran out of food this past week and was waiting for the first of the month to come around and got so excited knowing that I could go grocery shopping today, and it changes the way I think about some things a little bit.
Though Parham is a VISTA volunteer, her future is no different than many of the thousands of other Idahoans on food stamps. Once the year-long program is up at the Idaho Food Bank, she'll be out of a job again. And she doesn't know what will happen then.
At this point, I am not sure. I really like Boise, but since my job will be up, I have to go where there are jobs, so I might end up moving again. Not sure.
In the end, Becky Parham spent $37.88 of her $200 monthly allowance at Winco.
The number of people with stories like Parham is growing. Last June, just over 100,000 people in Idaho were on food stamps. This June, the number had climbed to almost 150,000. For Boise State Radio, I'm Don Wimberly.
And I'm Samantha Wright.
Idaho has always had a very high percentage of people without health insurance or access to basic health care. But in the last year, tens of thousands of Idahoans have lost their jobs and their health insurance with it.
That's true, Elizabeth. I'll give you an example. When you walk into Max and Debbie Roberts' rental house in Eagle, you'll see it's nice, plenty big enough for two people, but a little crowded with beautiful and expensive things. As soon as Max and Debbie sit down to tell their story, the elegant grandfather clock by the front door decides to chime in. Max jumps up to still the pendulum, and Debbie tries to get rid of the clock entirely.
That's a nice clock.
It's for sale. We'll sell anything right now, almost, except the dog. We need money to put food on the table and to pay our rent for next month, and so, you know, this is just stuff. If we need to sell it, that's fine.
Not long ago, the Roberts were acquiring stuff, not trying to get rid of it. This year they lost their home after their building business was crippled by the crash in the housing market. The Roberts are the kind of people who scarcely go a sentence without thanking God for something. One of the things they thank God for most often is keeping them healthy, because they don't have insurance anymore. But Debbie, at least, wouldn't stay healthy without daily medications for cholesterol and thyroid problems. Luckily for Debbie, the Roberts know a very special doctor, Carl Watts.
We knew Dr. Watts more through his Genesis World Missions than through the Garden City Clinic. He does wonderful work over in
Kenya.
And, you know, years back we were able to generously give and did so with great joy. Now, since I've been a patient at his clinic, I see what a wonderful ministry this is to the local people.
The Garden City Community Clinic is a converted warehouse staffed by volunteer doctors, nurses, counselors, and even dentists. They see patients free as long as those patients are at 200% or less of federal poverty guidelines. The clinic's founder, Dr. Carl Watts, has been treating Boise's poor for the better part of a decade.
It's not a new thing for us to see that individual who had a job, lost the job, lost medical coverage, and then shows up at our doorstep. The issue now is the extent of it. We're definitely seeing more and more people that are yes, newly impoverished. This is the first time they've had to access this type of service.
Dr. Watts says there is a large number of people stuck in the middle. These people have lost their insurance, but they don't qualify for things like Medicare and Medicaid. He says those are the very people who have the most trouble getting medical care. Watts' own Garden City Clinic is one solution for these people, but it's sort of a Band-Aid on a gaping wound.
The issue is there's more people that fall into that gap than we can see or serve, than Terry Riley can see or serve, than the Family Practice Residency can see or serve. If we operate this clinic 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, we still would not be able to see all those patients that need care.
Elizabeth, Watts mentions other places where people without insurance can go to get medical care, like Terry Riley Health Services. Terry Riley operates clinics in 5 Southwest Idaho cities, and they charge patients on a sliding scale. Another option is the Family Medicine Residency. It's Idaho's training program for soon-to-be family doctors. They also offer discounted services based on income. The program director is Dr. Ted Epperly.
The economy has had a major impact on health care. We're seeing that people are living sicker, and they're actually dying younger because of the economy.
Adam, what does Dr. Epperly mean by living sicker?
Epperly says people aren't going to the doctor when they need to, or they aren't taking the medicines they need. They're just trying to live with their health problems.
And he says this is something they can actually measure.
Yes. In addition to being the head of Idaho's Family Medicine Residency, Epperly is also the president of the American Academy of Family Physicians and has access to information most people don't have.
What we've seen from a national survey that we did of family doctors was that our family physicians were seeing 60% increase in health problems in their patients. And this was around foregoing preventive care, such as pap smears, mammograms, colonoscopies, as well as things they were doing with their medications, not filling prescriptions, cutting pills in half to try to make them last longer instead of taking the full amount, taking pills every other day instead of on a daily basis.
What's so disturbing is when he talks about the economy making people actually die younger.
He has examples from that from doctors all around the country. Here's just one.
We had a diabetic male that was receiving diabetes medicines. He lost his job, and because of that, he stopped taking his medication, thought that he could get through this. And what then happened was his blood sugar got out of control, it precipitated a heart attack, and he died.
Epperly mentions, as do all physicians, the importance of preventative medical care.
That's right. He says some of the biggest costs in health care to individuals and taxpayers come from things that could have been prevented for very little money. But Epperly says this type of care is usually the first thing people drop when money gets tight.
And Adam, think of all the routine care we're supposed to get regularly. Annual mammogram after you reach age 40, the prostate screening or PSA test, just an annual checkup or regular dental visit. So what are dentists seeing? We talked to David Sigmiller. He goes to Horseshoe Bend regularly to serve the surrounding rural population, but Sigmiller's main practice is in Meridian.
We have people calling every week, sometimes every day, that say that they've lost their job and aren't coming in for their regular checkups and cleanings. And that, I think, is going to have a very adverse effect down the road.
Part of what Sigmiller sees coming down the road are the negative ripple effects inadequate dental care can have on the rest of the body.
Periodontal disease has been associated with coronary artery disease, stroke, diabetes, bacterial pneumonia, and adverse outcomes with pregnancies, especially low birth weight.
Sigmiller says dental decay is the most common of all diseases, especially among children. But he also says it is the most preventable disease. He says there's already a clear line between the haves and the have-nots when it comes to teeth. The poorest 25% of the population bears 80% of the disease burden. And this is all because of a lack of routine mouth maintenance.
We found there are a myriad of problems, but no easy solutions. The complexity comes from the very foundation of people's philosophical beliefs on how the world should work. Take Max and Debbie Roberts. They say it was their church and a volunteer clinic that helped them most. They think that's how it should be. They don't want government involved with healthcare. But many doctors, Ted Epperly among them, think government involvement to some extent is the solution.
So as dentists like Dr. Sigmiller and physicians like Dr. Epperly and Dr. Watts share with us how the economic realities of 2009 affect the lives and the health of their patients, people, tens of thousands of people, like Max and Debbie, will navigate through a system as best they can, hoping to stay healthy because they are simply too poor to be sick. For Boise State Radio, I'm Elizabeth Duncan.
And I'm Adam Cotterell.
Inside the Salvation Army, the lobby is packed, full of parents. And everyone has a different story. Some have one child, some have six or eight. Some are recently jobless, and others have been unemployed for years and are now living in a homeless shelter. But they do have one thing in common. They all have children they must support. We wanted to hear their stories.
Well, I'm raising my kids by myself. Seems like the better job you get, it doesn't really matter. It's the same as it has been when I didn't have a job almost.
Got 2 6-year-olds and a 5-year-old. Right now we're out of work, and so it's been horrible.
By getting these supplies, it just helps what we have go farther.
If you can take care of the basics and stuff, you have that little extra that you can, you know, pay the utilities and the mortgage.
It's just really difficult right now, you know, to get stuff for him. And I've really been stressing about school because I don't have any money right now.
Kind of hard because my husband lost his job. And since I have my baby, I can't go to work. I mean, I will go back in September, but still I'm not working now. So right exactly at this time when we need to buy school supplies, we both are not working.
It's kind of embarrassing, but, you know, everybody needs help once in a while. And just take advantage of it and just be grateful that they're here.
Last year, it took the Salvation Army almost 2 weeks to hand out all of their school supplies. This year, it was a completely different story. They ran out of school supplies after 2 days. And just last year, and even the year before, many of the people we talked to had steady jobs, a fixed income to support their families. Now, they spend their days in lines, and their kids are waiting with them, seeing firsthand mom and dad's anguish. Like Janelle. She is already waiting 2 hours before the Salvation Army opens to get a clothing voucher.
I am unemployed, and my husband does work, but we just find ourselves that it's nice to be able to come here and spend our money on bills and food and things that are more important.
This is Janelle's first time using the clothing voucher service, and as she waits in a line that wraps around the building, she admits this year has been demoralizing and painful.
It's humiliating, sure. It's embarrassing to ask for help, and you feel a little degraded when you have to ask for help. You're grateful for whatever you do get, and you're just like, okay, thank you. And you put your head down and you just say thank you, and that's all you can do.
And when you see the children in the lines for food, clothes, pencils, and paper for school, you see their parents, and you don't need to look too deep into their eyes to see their heartbreak.
It hurts. It hurts deep inside when I can't provide for my family and pay the bills on time and buy the things that they need. You know, it hurts me.
Tracy Braddock and his wife Nancy have 2 boys. Benjamin is 9. He's in the 4th grade. Their 5-year-old, Gabriel, just started kindergarten. The Braddocks have the simplest and purest of hopes for their boys.
You know, I want them to grow up humble, be good men.
Kind
to others. I just don't want them to struggle through life like we have.
Ben was an infant. Gabriel had just been born as the Braddocks spiraled into poverty. The center of their storm, like so many others, were their health care costs. Nancy has MS. Tracy suffers from chronic pain.
Oh, my shots? They're $1,600 a pop.
I'm on pain medication. It costs $32 a month.
And what happens when a medical crisis strikes a family that is homeless? Ben had just turned 4.
Yeah, he got very sick with pneumonia. Yeah. And they had to give him a shot, and then we're thinking, well, where are we going to go? So then the hospital gave us a social worker, and then they end up putting us up in the Oahe Hotel for the night. So we could have a place to go and sleep. And
then we went over to a Salvation Army, their shelter over there, stayed for a couple of months. And I was able to get work through a temp service here.
And that's how the turnaround starts. A little help here, another program there.
help us out a little, you know, give us a hand up, you know, not a hand out. And
the Braddocks were the very first family to go through Boise's CATCH program, that is, charitable assistance to the community's homeless, providing long-term shelter while a family builds a bridge to sustainability.
If it wouldn't have been for the CATCH program, I don't know what we would have done. It's a wonderful program. I'm glad it's taken off like it has.
And since more than 100 families have gone through the Boise CATCH program, that's hundreds of children. A new sister program has just begun in Canyon County. Make no mistake, the Braddocks are still struggling. They're barely making ends meet. Thanksgiving and Christmas will be very lean. But they are together. They are a family. The boys have hot meals, slightly worn sneakers, and their own beds.
But living your formative years during one of the biggest financial crises this country has faced in generations will leave a lasting impression.
Families come in because families are stressed. And when families are stressed, sometimes our worst traits come out. Children become obstinate. They become defiant. Parents don't know how to cope. They're coping with loss of job, loss of social stature. Now I've got my kids acting out, and it just becomes a snowball of difficulty for everyone.
Dr. Tom Young is the Director of Operations for the Warm Springs Counseling Center in Boise. Dr. Young has seen many more clients, both families and children, who are accessing his professional guidance on a whole host of issues.
Kids, to some extent, get confused. They don't understand, number one, why we can't do things. And then recognizing that it's difficult for them, they may have to change schools, they may have to try and create new friends, they may not fit in or feel like they fit in anymore because they don't have the new tennis shoes or they don't have the right flip-flops or whatever it may be. So they're coping with a set of issues, which then sort of rolls up to the parents having to deal with it as well. So it's a very stressful time.
Dr. Young says there are things parents can do to help make the family life a little easier, especially when it comes to the most vulnerable part of the family, children. And having frank and age-appropriate discussions with kids is the key.
We're not going to go to McDonald's as often as we did. We're going to make that a treat, and we're going to try and go every 2 weeks as best we can. But that's not someplace we're going to stop. We're probably not going to get certain things, but we're going to try and make up for that by and come up with some solution that you can manage as it relates to them.
Things like giving kids something to look forward to. That's also inexpensive for parents, like going to the Greenbelt or a city park.
If parents go in a room, shut the door, figure it all out, come out and try and spiff it up, probably not going to work. Some of that decision-making needs to go in. We have this much money. Should we do this or should we do this? Certainly not about everything, but I think there's ways to bring kids into that discussion.